Good luck.
Welcome, everyone, to Rock M Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts, a Missouri Tigers basketball podcast. We are on Season 6, Episode 2. All things Mizzou basketball. I am your host, Sam Snelling. With me, as always, from the lonely, barren plains of Indiana, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm going to sidestep that comment, and I'm just going to say I'm grateful you dropped the top 10 bit. Like, you can't even location shame me here. You've just given up the bit, and I'm relieved. Our 2 month nightmare is over.
Matt, if you were curious, and all of our listeners, I'm sure, are wondering, we are still an SB Nation College top 10 podcast. I think last month we came at like 7th. Still doing good. Still getting the downloads. Appreciate the listeners. We are in the throes of late August. Missouri basketball news is pretty light at this point. Pretty much everything that we're going to be discussing moving ahead, I believe, is going to be focused on recruiting. Before we kind of turn the page, Matt, and we get into September, and then you start talking non-conference schedule and conference opponents, and we start getting some guests, and then we're really not that long away from actually having college basketball sitting in our laps. How excited are you?
I'll be excited to have actual games to watch. Yes. That's a wonderful answer on my part. I just kind of want to see what the actual product, that Dennis Gates is working on. I'm sorry, that wasn't very enthusiastic, but
yeah, don't get too excited here. So we're recording this on Monday, August 29th. Just so everybody knows. Mizzou football kicks off here on Thursday of this week. So Rock'em Nation, the flagship website, is just, it's all Mizzou football all the time right now. About the only thing you're really going to see, I think, Matt, you do have a Trent Pierce thing coming out. I'll be continuing to sort of do little, quick previews of some of the non-conference opponents. But the rest of the stuff that's going on is basically we're trying to figure out who is going to be on campus for recruiting visits, who is Mizzou trying to get signed up for their 2023 recruiting class. We already know two guys that they have in Trent Pierce and Anthony Robinson. We know that East St. Louis and Konzo Martin fanboy Michaela Rich has been back for an official visit just last week for Missouri. And so we feel like this is something that is a little newsworthy because Dennis Gates and CY saw them some Michaela Bridge and said that Konzo Martin might know a thing or two about this kid. If he's on him, we're on him. And they offered him a scholarship, got him on campus. And it looks like it's down to who, Matthew?
It looks like it's going to be a Mizzou K-State race. Although he's going to go to Ole Miss this week. Take them visits, kid. They're free trips. Use them. Don't turn down a free trip. Don't do it.
Didn't Ole Miss just take a kid?
Ole Miss has taken three guys. So the question is, how many slots would they have? But as we know in the transfer portal area, you can always make room if you need to. So if they are, if McCaleb wants to commit and they are wanting to add him to the roster, they can make that spot available through various machinations. But it looks like, or it sounds like that it's Mizzou and K-State. So he's going to go to Ole Miss this week. Then next week he goes to Manhattan for an OV. And then I believe after that it's down to UIC and Eastern Michigan. And he's set to announce on September 26th. So we'll see, if that...
That's right. They took Jordan Burks.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, who consequently another Mizzou target, but kind of another guy at that 3-4 hybrid position. But like I said, if Kermit and his staff want to sign McCaleb up, they can make room if that's something McCaleb wants as well. So, but I think the intel we got was that it went well. The staff feels confident. Granted, I don't think anyone has ever heard a staff say, man, that bombed. We screwed up.
That official visit was trash.
Man, we botched it. Crap. we screwed up. But the Rich recruitment is sort of interesting. I think, and you know, we've talked about on this pod, you know, previously, you know, Rich has sort of had an interesting trajectory. Definitely has some high major athleticism, especially off of 2 feet. And if he can get a little bit of momentum into elevation, he can get off the floor and has some bounce. But the question was always, you know, where was the skill set, you know, there? You know, he's not an easy positional fit at the three or the four. You know, a lot of his sort of offensive productivity, you know, comes from, you know, cutting, from getting on the glass, from lobs, from, you know, making, you know, plays in transition. There's not really a defined skill set for him in the half court where the ball's in his hands. But I've chewed through the film that I, from July, I think, of him with Southwest Illinois Jets, his AAU team. And you can see that he's tightened up the handle a little bit. You know, kind of telegraphs things. He's got some, you know, moves that he's, you know, leans on heavily off the bounce and certain touches and spots that he really prefers to work in. But you can begin to see him sort of operate more on the perimeter and sort of play in those spots. And I think the bigger deal for me was defensively, he's used as a four at East St. Louis, but you saw him play more on the wing and kind of stretch his wings out there a little bit defensively. So, you know, clearly an upside play, probably a four-year guy, but you can begin to see kind of a little bit more definition coming into his game. And, you know, the kid just plays his ass off, so he's going to fit culturally there. But, you know, I think Rich is sort of a good, you know, case for why you always, you know, keep tracking kids. You always keep, you know, watching film and looking at them and checking in, because, you know, maybe in March we would have said, he's a straight mid-major kid. And now you can see, you know, the contours of why maybe a certain high majors would want to take a flyer on him and would want to bring him in. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether or not he gets to some of those mid-major stops, but Mizzou seems to be in good position here.
You know, Matthew, on his Twitter bio, he does list himself as a guard.
I think he's a wing at the next level. I think the one thing, you know, we talked a little bit about it with Trent Pierce last time, is I think where his strength and athleticism shows up is if he gets caught in switch situations. If you're a switch-heavy team, and, you know, teams run floppier, they run pin downs, and he gets switched onto a four or a five, the kid's going to be strong enough to hold up ground there and, you know, fight for short durations and in certain situations against bigger dudes. Is he a guy you want guarding the four or five, you know, for long stretches? Probably not. But I think the strength is there, you know, to handle some switch situations, which is a boon to have. So the thing that I really liked was I watched him, you know, really do a nice job sort of in different ball screen situations, whether he was having to guard the screen as kind of the hedge guy or in drop or having to try and get over the top of screens. So I think that was sort of heartening to see. He's strong enough on the ball that I think, you know, he's going to be able to bump guys off, especially on the AAU circuit that you know, the Jets played on. I think he was able to, you know, out tough and out strength a lot of guards, but you know, we'll be interested to see whether or not he's got the agility or kind of the quickness, you know, to stay in front of some guys. But I definitely think if you were to look at the long-term projection, he's more of a three than a four.
Yeah, I would sort of refer to him like almost like a jumbo wing. I think on the last podcast, I sort of made the comment that I think he reminds me a lot of like a guy like Raekwon Gray, who played for Florida State a few years ago. Not like the biggest guy, but a guy that probably played a lot of the three and the four for them. And by not the biggest, I mean not the tallest. I think we're just so used to Florida State running out all these big, long, tall athletes. He was a stockier dude, but a dude that just sort of knew what he was good at and could kind of get to his spots and be effective in those spots. And I think he reminds me a little bit of that. Maybe like a less skilled version of like, you know, Kobe Brown as far as like his size with maybe a little more athleticism, you know, and Kobe, I think, kind of found a home in that sort of, you know, hybrid wing role. And I think that like if you're projecting sort of where, you know, Caleb is going to help, you know, I think that's it. Another guy that he also kind of reminds me a little bit is from actually at Ole Miss was Luis Rodriguez.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, Rodriguez was a guy who they had a hard time keeping off the floor. He played hard. He defended hard. He defended well.
Rebounded his position
Kermit,
well.
And for Kermit, you know, defense has been a thing that's kind of been hit and miss for some of his teams recently. So you had to keep him on the floor. And he ran the floor hard. He got putbacks. He did all like the kind of little things that Ole Miss kind of needed, which makes total sense as to why, you know, they ran him off and got him into the portal. But I think like if you sort of take those three dudes like Raekwon Gray, Kobe Brown, and Luis Rodriguez, and you sort of, you know, mix them all together, then you get some sort of amalgamation of like what McCaleb Rich might be at the college level.
And there's room for guys like that in a 9 or 10 man rotation. Those guys have a purpose. They have a role. And the one thing I will say about him is I think with Kobe, there was kind of the desire, I think, to be a jumbo point. There's not that sort of like deep seated desire in McCaleb Rich. I think the one thing
that, yeah, that's a good point.
I think Rich knows who he is as a player. I think he, and you watch him, you know, with East St. Louis, he does his job. You know, he's a four man for them, you know, plays, you know, in spots where you'd expect to see kind of a hybrid four play, you know, is engaged defensively. You know, I think the one thing is he's not a guy, you know, who at least when you watch him play the game, isn't trying to project himself into a different role. He does what he is good at doing. And, you know, the one thing I do like is when you see the handle that he's trying to tighten up and add, it's in spots that clearly work for him and where he's comfortable. You know, is it telegraphed a little bit? Yeah. But I think, you know, he doesn't try and force, you know, his ability to play off the bounce in situations where it's not warranted. He'll move the ball if he doesn't get the situation that he wants. You know, I think there's a clear IQ there as to, you know, when he can pick and choose what he wants to do and try and show off some expanded, you know, parts of his game, but he's not forcing it. So I think that that's the one thing that makes me like Rich a little bit more. I think when I watched Kobe's tape, it was very clearly like Kobe would get into a situation where he's like, now is where I show off that I can handle. Or now's where I show that I can shoot off a one dribble pickup in a ball screen. Like when McCaleb Rich attacks, it's when the ball reverses to him. He's got one on the weak side of the floor. He's got a smaller guard on him and he can just bully drive his way to the rim. And if he doesn't get by the guy, he'll just crab dribble and back the guy into the post and get to a floater. Like that's it. Other than that, he's going to move the ball and he's going to keep doing what he does. So I think that that's the thing that I kind of liked is, he doesn't get outside of himself as a player. And, you know, I think if he gets on campus and, you know, buys in, which, you know, it seems like he's willing to do, you know, any sort of team he's with, then I think he can find a useful role within the rotation, assuming that, you know, he winds up in Columbia.
So moving on from Rich, since, you know, I believe we talked quite a bit about him on the last pod. The other sort of 2023 targets that I think you and I both feel like we can sort of maybe push a little bit to the side as far as whether or not they're a real priority. I think one is Jazz Gardner, who I actually didn't know that Jelani Gardner was Jazz's dad. I found that out the other day while I was like, look, I think I followed Jazz and I think he retweeted or liked something and it shows up in your Twitter feed. And it was like, I remember Jelani Gardner. He was a player at UCLA years back. So that's his kid. But it looks like Missouri might be a graphic filler.
Yeah. He's only taken two officials, or he's only taken one official, and that's to Dayton. And then he has one where he's lined up to Texas Tech. We talked about him in the last spot. He's got kind of a weird finalist group there, but you just don't see Missouri, you know, mentioned quite a bit there. I mean, except sporadically. And then the other prospect is Justin McBride, who had a really, 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 really good July. The last staff was all over him. I took an unofficial visit last June, I think, late last June. And then I thought he was on campus for an official visit for the now infamous Paul Quinn game, where his AAU coach coached the other Tigers that were here out of the Dallas area.
PQC taking on SLU this year. Go crazy, Billikens fans.
Go crazy. Go crazy. So McBride had a good May and July, I should say. They weren't on the circuit in June, but just again feels like graphic filler there. It feels like, you know, Rich and him are kind of in the same positional slot, and they've got Rich on campus. Rich is a guy, I think, you know, who every indication is that maybe, you know, he wants to commit to Mizzou, but there may be a question as to whether he's a take. You know, that, you know, that's always sort of fluid and sort of murky, but those are just two names that I think, you know, at this point, you look at the board and you look at who's getting in and who's, you know, lining up visits, especially if, you know, guys have their timelines to get committed by the end of October. It seems like Rich has already been here and McBride and Gardner haven't booked dates, so they're all booked up for ones that would make sense in September. So, looks like they just included Missouri to round out the graphic. But the two names that I think most people are going to care a lot about are Chris Parker and Jordan Butler. And we're waiting to see when Mizzou or if Mizzou winds up on their itinerary.
Yeah, I thought we expected, you know, based on intel that there would be a little bit more movement for Parker by the end of August. As we are at the end of August, it doesn't look like that's happening. It looks like his timeline is expanding a bit. And Butler's a guy who it seems like that, you know, him and his family were always willing to sort of take their time with this process. And I think that's one of the things that I find very healthy. Like, you know, there's no reason to rush decisions. And, I think there's certain situations where when you just have the right feeling and you know, like, yeah, go ahead and do it. You know, but for most kids, what you want to do is you want to get as much information as possible, present that information, you know, as a family, what's going to work best for us, what's going to work best for our kid. And it seems like the Butlers are definitely sort of taking that path.
Yeah. The one thing that was conveyed to me was that if Missouri gets him here, it becomes a neck and neck race with South Carolina. Probably he had a great visit there. Lamont Paris has made him probably the biggest priority aside from GG Jackson. So, you know, I almost sort of think of it, this is what would have happened had, you know, Jonte Porter, you know, been, you know, not reclassified, but would have been a traditional cycle. I think you would have definitely seen, you know, Konzo Martin sell out to make that guy, you know, the clear priority there and really orient everything towards that sort of level of effort. Butler fills a real, real pressing positional need. I think they could use some size up front, but, you know, we'll see if, you know, when a date sort of materializes. He was supposed to see FSU last weekend, but apparently FSU had to like resurface their, you know, practice gym. And so he couldn't watch a practice. So they decided, hey, if we can't do that, we're going to rebook it. So when that gets rescheduled, we don't know. And when, you know, Missouri winds up on the books, we don't know. Parker, it's been conveyed that, you know, he's working towards finding a date, but hasn't quite landed on one yet. But, you know, he's already locked in two other visits. He's going to go to UCF, I think, on September 24. I'm sorry about that. And he's going to go to Alabama on September 17. So if you're looking for home dates, you know, for football games, which is usually when these things get aligned, this weekend is the only other option on the calendar. And there's no, at least since right now, that there's going to be a sneak visit for him to get in. So we'll see when, you know, Parker tries to get something lined up. But those are the two that I think we've been waiting on to see, you know, when or if they're going to get into town, mostly because I think Parker was the one that had the most smoke around his name, and things have not cooled there, but I would say that, like you said earlier, the pace has definitely eased up a little bit.
Yeah. And, we were kind of chatting a little bit before we came on, the podcast, you know, as far as like what we sort of thought this class, could be. And I mean, whether it's like, I think minimum of three, Do you think they get to five?
In this day and age, you can make the math work however you want it to work. To me, if you could land Parker, Butler, and Rich, and you feel like those are all guys that are going to come in and be absolute system fits, that they're going to be able to come in, you know, and they're going to be part of a roster at that point that would have, you know, six underclassmen on it. You know, you'd have five freshmen and then Aiden Shaw. You know, do you feel like you could skew a roster to where maybe you're going to have four or five young guys in your rotational mix just based out of sheer numbers and, you know, guys that are in the top 150 don't come to sit? You know, is that a direction you want to go next year and really lean into youth? I think they could make the numbers work to get to two or three openings in spring where you could bring in some veterans. But, you know, I look up and down the roster and I do see some merits to going to five because Anthony Robinson II's point guard, Chris Parker probably profiles as a combo guard. Trent Pierce is a big wing. McCaleb Rich is probably a wing, but could play the four. Pierce could be a hybrid guy. And then you get a big, plus you have Aiden Shaw there. You've essentially locked in young talent at every position on the roster. And then, you know, if you bring back a Noah Carter and a Nick Honor next year, those are two old heads that, you know, you can feel like you can trust. If Ryan DeGray's back, that's a guy that's got some college experience. Then you're really working the portal to find some higher end guys that maybe can come in and eat some of, you know, the heavier minutes, you know, 26, 28 minutes a game at certain spots. And now you've got a roster that sort of balances out. I think there's merits in looking at five, but, you know, four seems like, you know, the Goldilocks number at this point, you know, where you take four and then you look around this spring if you feel like, you know, you want to bring in some more experience. Plus, four guys in this class, you know, gives you a little bit more roster balance. But I think there are merits, you know, if all five want to sign up and you feel like if the stated goal is to get this roster and the level of talent overhauled as quickly as possible, I think, you know, you take the consequence of being a little bit young next year.
So just to sort of reset a little bit, on the current roster, there's one scholarship available.
Yeah.
A lot of people believe that Mabor Majak is going to be the guy who probably picks that up, at least for the year. But we believe that that's one of those, like, flexible scholarships that if Dennis Gates needs it next year, he'll probably use it. DeAndre Golston, Trey Gamillion, Demoy Hodge. Those three guys are gone. They have, after this year, no additional eligibility left. If they wanted to come back, they could not. I think maybe you would put an exception on if somebody suffers a season-ending injury or something like that. Hopefully that is not the case, and they all play the entire season. And then they're moving on to whatever professional careers. Then you get into guys who are seniors this year, which would be Kobe Brown, Nick Honor, and Isaiah Mosley. Those guys technically have expiring eligibility, but since they played in a season in that COVID season a couple years ago, that year did not count. So they could come back if they wanted. However, if nobody comes back, none of the seniors. So that's where we're going to start. There are currently five spots available. If you take Chris Parker and McCaleb Rich, and Butler, then that takes you down to what, two? Am I doing that right?
Right now I've got, you know, three spots that are, you know, if they land McCaleb Rich, all three spots for graduating guys are gone. That means you've officially filled all the slots that would be created by Hodge, Golston, and Gamillion leaving. You'd be perfectly aligned there. Assuming you have one more open that Majak is going to basically seed next year, that gets you to four, which could be theoretically Butler or Parker, you know, if you wanted to go there. The question that comes into play is, do you think Kobe Brown, Isaiah Mosley, or Sean East come back next year? The indication, at least when I talked to Anthony Robinson, was that the staff was selling him on coming in and learning behind Nick Honor, which would imply, obviously, that Honor would be back next year. And Noah Carter has said in multiple places and even said to me, you know, I'm looking forward to my 2 years in Columbia. So realistically, you're looking at three guys outgoing, one spot that's sort of a flex spot. And then, you know, the question is, do you expect, you know, Brown, Mosley, and East to go and not, you know, use their further eligibility? So that means you're at four right now with up to seven. And then do you believe there are going to be any other defections that happen? So I would expect that you're going to probably go north of four because maybe Isaiah Mosley has a freak accident happen. Maybe he decides he needs to come back. But I imagine Isaiah Mosley is probably going to go try and earn a professional paycheck. So that's an easy way to get to five spots. Is Mosley goes, you have five slots to fill, and you can make it work. And then the real question is, do you expect Kobe Brown and Sean East to go? And
Sean East is listed as a junior.
Mm-hmm. So
And so that's one thing to kind of keep in mind is the online roster is representative of like what the university classifies them. So if he's listed as a junior, which might make sense why he went to junior college, then he still has a junior and a senior year to play. And so like he's listed the same as Noah Carter, who's also listed as junior. So at this point, like, I think if you're basically looking at the three guys that are gone, the next three guys, what their decisions are going to make. And at this point, we feel like Nick Honor is coming back. And that's based upon your conversations with Robinson.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question I think would be, what's Kobe Brown going to do? The question would be, you know, what is Isaiah Mosley going to do? We both feel like Mosley's probably out the door. Like he was going to do one more year, college, make his money in Como, play in front of the home crowd, and then go get the professional paychecks. I do think there's probably a fair question if Caleb Brown is going to stick around if his brother's not there. But in all reality here, I mean, like, you know, Kobe could decide to come back and play. And so, like, that's one of the reasons why I think I'm a little hesitant to see if they would go to five. To me, like, four just feels, and again, like, with the portal, you always have flexibility. But I just feel like with four, you do have the right flexibility that you need. And again, like, if they know, like, you know, maybe they probably had a conversation with Kobe, and Kobe said, yeah, I'm gone after this year. Like, I'm graduating. I want to go play professionally. And maybe they know that, you know, Caleb has said, my brother's not here. I'm not going to be here. Like, we committed to Gonzo. I want to play with my brother. If he's gone, I'm gone. You know, it's possible, like, all these conversations have happened. And they kind of know what they need. And I think if you see them going to five, then chances are that they know exactly who they have coming back next year.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, that, you know, again, I think there's merits to five. You know, this is about, you know, getting as much talent in the door as you possibly can. And if you believe you're going to play 9 to 10 guys, you're going to have minutes for dudes. So we'll see what they decide. But four seems like the projection we're working off of right now. The one thing, if they took four this year, is they would have a big class potentially in line for next year. I think right now, if you just follow the, assuming no defections and everyone just follows their eligibility, you're at five slots in 2024. And that leads us into kind of the quick recapper here on what's really shaping up as a, you know, productive September 16, 17 weekend and productive first weekend of October, because Sam, they've the caliber of visitors that are set to come in, I can't remember when they've had, when the program's had this kind of, you know, level of talent come in, you know, a year ahead of time here. But,
well, Matt, let's talk about that that one beautiful fall afternoon, when Tim Fuller,
yes, when Tim
and Kim Anderson brought in
virtually
every top prospect that they could.
Free trips, man. Take them, kids.
I wrote about that because, like, we were like, we had really good information on everybody that was coming in, and it was an extensive list. Like, I think, I want to say, like, Miles Bridges was on that.
Yeah.
And Thomas Bryant.
Yeah.
And so those guys were class of what, 15 or 16?
15, I think.
So, and then they, Michael Porter Jr. was there. I want to say Jason Tatum was there. Cause Porter was 19.
Yeah.
And is that right? Tatum was
18,
a year ahead of him. Man, all this stuff is like blurring together, but it was like, I may have to find that article and pull it up and tweet it out. Cause it was an impressive list. Of course, they had just hired Rob Fulford, and Fulford brought pretty much
Huntington prep
every top dude that was at Huntington on campus for a visit, of which they didn't get very many of those guys, Matt. So yeah, so it's been a while since we've had like a really sort of big sweeping, you know, like not in just like one weekend, but like a couple weekends of like just bringing in younger top prospects. You know, Martin may have done it, but he was always way more under the radar. Get the guys in the off season, you know, really try to make the impression early and that kind of stuff. And it doesn't appear like, you know, Gates and CY are much are worried about you know, the kinds of things that, you know, maybe Zova's worried about. They're going after it, man.
Yeah, the September 17 weekend is going to have a guy who I'm sort of happy to see they're still in the mix for, John Bull, a 7 foot big, a consensus top 20 kid, or should be a consensus top 20 kid, at least based on the composite. Had
earlier in the clubhouse is Evansville. Yeah or nay? You think?
man, if Marcus could get into the Valley, it'd be a massive win for those guys. They've had a rough go of it recently with Walter and Todd Licklider. His
former SLU assistant coach in Evansville, Marcus
Wilson,
played at Evansville. The new coaching staff turnover was hired as an assistant coach, and he is John, or at least was, I'm assuming still is. John Bull's guardian.
Yep.
And Bull went from playing at CBC to Sunrise Academy.
Yep, and ran with Mocan this summer, had a really, really good summer with Mocan. That same weekend, they are bringing in Marcus Allen, the number 41 player in the 247 composite. Allen's out of South Florida, runs with Florida Rebels, a guy that CY has been recruiting for quite a while there. You know, if you tuned in to watch any live streams, you would see CY posted up in close proximity to the Florida Rebel games. He's actually out at Compass Prep, which is a really, really good sort of independent prep school in the Phoenix area in Arizona.
With some Mizzou connections out there.
There is, specifically Trent Pierce, who is also on the Compass Prep roster. So that's handy. Yeah.
Recruit, Trent, recruit.
So Allen's going to come in that same weekend as John Bull. Then October 1st, you get two more really good bigs. You get James Brown, who's out of the Chicago area, runs with Mean Streets, plays for St. Rita. He's the number 30 prospect in the composite. And then you also get Dallas Thomas, who we talked about last time, who's a really, really interesting, just sort of potential recruiting battle with Muss and Arkansas. He's the number 39 prospect in the composite. A really, really lean kid, another hybrid kind of 4-5 kid out of Parkview in Little Rock, Arkansas, and runs with Brad Beal Elite. He'll be on campus October 1st with James Brown. And then there's Jordan McCollum, who's kind of another long, rangy 3-4 guy out of the Nashville area, I believe, that runs with BBE as well. So he's not a top 50 kid right now, but I could imagine him probably working his way into the top 150 of the composite once it expands later on this year. But that's, aside from just the glittering rankings for four of those guys, all of them, Sam, are four or fives on the positional chart. So I wonder what's a priority for the staff in 2024. Right now,
Biggs.
Right now, if you look at, again, just the projection earlier, they're looking at needing a hybrid four and maybe two bigs in that class. The front court right now is looking like an area of high need in that class. And boy, the staff is not being modest in its sights here. So that we can see early on the priority area of the rotation and just the caliber of kids they're looking to bring in. And this seems like the bailiwick for Gates and for CY. Florida State was known for developing big, rangy, athletic bigs, and that's what they've got here. Some of them, different body types, different sizes, but all of them are athletic. They have good agility. They're comfortable in space. Some are more developed offensively than others, but the one thing is you could put any of those guys in the front court, and they're going to be able to guard. And they're going to be able to switch, and they're going to be able to move, and they're going to be comfortable, you know, having to sort of navigate around the floor. This is kind of the class, I think, where, you know, you start to see, you know, the caliber of competition, sort of the caliber of talent go up a little bit. The 23 class, I think it has a lot of good, solid 4-year guys in it that, you know, could be really, that could grow into really, really, really productive juniors and seniors. This is one where I think you're starting to see maybe some guys that can, you know, walk on campus and make more of an instant impact early on. So these guys can take 5 visits as juniors and they can take 5 more seniors next year. But, you know, I don't expect any of these guys to commit now, but CY and Dennis made their bones by getting in early with guys, being the first one there before Blue Bloods really established relationships with kids. And if nothing else, it seems like that's what they're doing right now. So it's a heartening sign if you believe that, you know, Gates and, you know, CY are trying to duplicate what they did in Tallahassee.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, so anyone who is a class of 2024 kid, you're basically projecting that they would be freshmen on a roster with anybody who is currently a sophomore or freshman, which if you've looked at Missouri's roster, there
aren't many of those around.
It's Caleb Brown and Aiden Shaw. There's two guys, Caleb, who, again, we just don't know what his plans are if his brother is not around.
And if Aiden develops really well, yeah, he may...
It's entirely possible that, you know, that Aiden sort of hits the right notes in his development and is able to make the professional leap here in a couple of years. And then you sort of look, okay, now you've got Anthony Robinson and Trent Pierce on board. I think I talked at length the last podcast about how I feel about Trent. I really, really like this kid. Anthony Robinson looks like a very high upside play, you know, at sort of the point guard slot. But that's not a whole lot of guys. I think what you're definitely hoping for is to build the foundation that you need, getting in early on the bigs, and then you sort of see who the guards are that develop. And, you know, cause there aren't a lot of, athletic, tall, dudes out there, Matt.
John Bull is fun to watch, man.
There aren't like 25 of those guys out there. There's a handful that are, you know, that sort of project as effective high major bigs. I think that's why you sort of, you know, put a hard focus on that position early. Because, you know, guards are one of those things, like, you know, guys who develop and look, you know, great as freshman and sophomore, maybe they just sort of hit a lull, and you get the kid who is 5'6" as a freshman, and he sprouts into like a 6'3" or 6'4", point guard by the time he's by the time he's, you know, a junior or senior, and now you've got the kind of kid that you can project. I think a good example is who's the 3-star kid that Kentucky took? I think his dad played for Kentucky.
Reed Shepherd is who they took.
No. He's on this year's roster.
CJ Frederick.
No. He's gonna be a freshman. I feel like this is gonna drive me crazy. I do have Kentucky SEC, Kentucky 2022. His name is, this is great podcast radio right here, Adu Thiro.
Oh, he was a late recommit guy.
Yeah. So he ended up 165 in the composite. But I was just sort of reading a thing on him as I was putting together the Kentucky preview. And he was like, he was 5'9 as a freshman.
We saw it with driving Brazil. Brazil was a kid who was 6'2, 6'3, and then just had a massive growth spurt and, you know, went from unranked to a guy now that some people are thinking could potentially be a back into the lottery guy. So we see it with guys.
I don't know. Who is this you're referring to?
He who shall not be named, that's now in Fayetteville. So point being, the 24 class is where you start to get those kinds of guys who, when you walk into like the Nike Elite 100, you go, oh yeah, that's a pro. You look at the kid and go, oh yeah, that guy's going to be paid money to pay this sport, to play this sport. It's, you know, professionally with a contract, not NIL money now. So that's the kind of caliber they're looking at. Like if you will, like I've seen Dallas live, that kid looked like he could be, with a weight program, could have, you know, been coming off the bench last year. John Bull, one of the most enjoyable guys to watch play live. Rail thin, but you get him any sort of, you know, good base weight on him, that kid just plays his ass off. He's everywhere. He's got the kind of length, timing, sense of spatial awareness that you just can't teach. James Brown, physically developed, but just really good feel. Marcus Allen, physically developed, looks like he could be 17, 18, 19 years old. Like, just looks like a full-grown man. These are guys that you just look at and on the hoof, you're like, yeah, these are elite-level dudes. So, different kind of caliber there. You're not waiting. Those guys are, you get them on campus, you get them into the weight program, and you expect some immediate returns from having them there. But, Sam, we do have actual basketball to talk about this time. I don't know how much we're going to talk about it, but we have a non-conference schedule. We know we have dates. We don't have times, but we have dates and we have opponents.
Yeah. So I already previewed the opening two games. The last few years, I've done a post for each team individually, and then I looked at like the first, I can't remember off the top of my head,
seven games,
and I'm like, I think for the first of those games, I'm just gonna do two teams each because it's not very interesting. Although I will say Southern Indiana. If you're making the transition to Division I basketball, this is the kind of team that you would want to transition with. They were pretty good last year.
Super old.
They bring back everybody. Penn is game number two. And kind of a similar thing. They have a lot of guys that are coming back, including a class going to be a junior that was a really good class for them. I don't think they're like I don't think they're going to compete for the top of the Ivy. But they could. It looks like a game where if Missouri doesn't quite have their stuff together,
they can get College of Charleston.
Well, I was gonna say more like it's an uncomfortable game. like they're good enough that they could make it uncomfortable. You know, they're well coached. John Donahue, I think
Steve Donahue.
Steve Donahue. you know, he got a high major job. He got a high major job by being a really good coach in the mid-major. So, like, all these guys this level, even if they don't succeed, and, like, Boston College has turned into a really hard job, so I don't necessarily blame guys who fail there. He's a good coach. And I fully expect that game to be probably more uncomfortable than maybe we want. But it's still a game that I think Missouri probably wins by about, you know, 10 or 13 points.
Yeah. When I wrote about the schedule, I think a lot of people were like, well, duh, they scheduled easy. But I think you take any bit of data point, any data point you can, to really sort of calibrate what to expect from a staff. And I was sort of interested in, you know, how Gates would approach scheduling in year one. This is a roster that, you know, if you look at Torvik's projections, which are always sort of wonky and weird, at least at the player level, but if you look at, you know, where they're projected overall, they're at 48th in Torvik. You know, they're 8th or 9th in the SEC. That's bubble territory. You know, Joe Lenardi has them as one of the first four out. This is a team where, if, say, the forecasts are correct, your SOS matters. It matters, you know, come March. And you know, people look at SOS separate from the resume, which is really the wrong thing to do. It's like an ingredient in a recipe. You know, it, you know, kind of tells you the caliber ingredient you have, and you know who you play matters. And this is a staff, you know, it's got five potential Q1, Q2 games. They're all just backloaded in non-con. And you know, I think we're more accustomed to Zoe being especially assertive. Zoe was usually one of the top 20 high major non-con schedules in terms of SOS. You know, the Zoe, you know, it wasn't always home games which annoyed people, but Zoe played people, and, you know, Ken in year one had a really, really aggressive SOS. So coaches here over the last decade have, you know, been assertive a little bit in terms of who they put on the schedule. And this is definitely not that. If you just look at Torvik projections, you know, we're looking at 7 or 8 quad 3 and 4 games to start the year. You know, this team should be 7-0, 8-0, potentially 9-0, depending on what happens at Wichita State. Going into border war in Colombia, you know, I don't know how, you know, how hardy that 9-0 is going to be, but there's a possibility for this thing to look pretty good. But normally we would see maybe teams between like 100 and 150, some solid mid-major teams sprinkled in that late November stretch, and there's just not here. It's, you know, basically Mississippi Valley State and Coastal Carolina and Houston Baptist are usually dates when we would see somebody like Wofford or Stephen F. Austin or Northern Kentucky, maybe an AAC team in there. Now it's teams that are basically 250 or lower. So I think that
it really is a situation where they picked up that UCF game. And outside of that, like, Illinois is a contract game. Kansas is a contract game.
Iowa State's a contract
game. Wichita State is a contract game. Like, Iowa State is a game that your conference is in contract with to play. And then everything else that's on this schedule is filler.
The filler games, if you look at the...
They're dubs.
If you look at the filler games here, the average efficiency rating for those filler games would be equivalent to the number 311 team in KenPom. They absolutely booked dubs. And if... Not to say that, like, this team, this staff, they'd love to make the NCAA tournament. You know, Dennis Gates has said in different places, you know, our focus is being there in March. To me, it seems like what they said early on was, we got to get our guys on the same page. We need some reps where our guys, you know, figure out playing together against, you know, in live fire, we figure out our rotation. And if we hit if we have to make a massive jump in early December, we're fine with that. We are absolutely fine with that. And, you know, the question really is UCF a game that, you know, stays quad 2, or does it grow into a quad 1-1? Does, you know, Wichita State exceed expectations and become a quad 1 game? And maybe you pick up one or two victories in non-con there. Because the SEC schedule, you know, the SEC is looking like the number 2 conference in terms of, you know, overall strength this year. They're going to have opportunities in SEC play. it's just a way more of their quad one and quad two games. I'm looking at it right now. They've got 20 quad one and 20 quad two games, potentially 12 of those are away from Columbia. So they just, it's, if they're going to get quality wins, they're going to have to do a lot of that, you know, away from their own building, or they're going to have to really pick off teams like Arkansas, Bama, Kentucky, LSU, and Columbia. So it's, I get why they did it. You know, I wrote that, you know, what they did isn't all that, you know, wild for a first year program, especially one that was in Missouri situation. But I thought maybe they might keep one or two games a little bit better in quality, just for the fact that if they thought they had a roster that could contend in March, maybe they want to, you know, back, you know, have some quality in there to where the committee is not going to look at them and go, yeah, you guys just had body bag games for the first 6 weeks of the season. But I get it. There's competing sort of missions there. And I think it's just jarring because, you know, rarely do you see, you know, sub 250 teams just stacked one on top of the other to start a season. But, you know,
well, at least at Missouri, really, like, you know, like that's one of the things, you know, Konzo was always pretty aggressive in his scheduling, and, you know, much to maybe his own chagrin, so was Commanderson. You know, I think even Mike Anderson caught a little flack for, you know, stacking up patsies, but, you know, their schedule, if you even go back and look at it, wasn't as bad as this one is. Just in terms of quality of opponent. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, I mean, you look at the, you know, the Kansas game, and I expect the atmosphere to be, you know, out of this world. I expect Isaiah Mosley to probably be the best player on the court that night. But is it going to be enough to beat, you know, Kansas? You know, maybe if the NCAA decides that Bill Self needs to be suspended. Otherwise, I think you chalk that up as loss. Illinois looks really good this year. You know, another top 20 team that's a neutral court. So I think what you're probably doing is you're looking at a non-conference that's already starting with two very likely losses. You know, so let's see if we can, you know, get enough kind of momentum built off smacking around some patsies and work out our kinks through those games, figure out our rotations, and then we'll see if we can kind of pull off some tougher wins and at least be more competitive, you know, not get blown out by Kansas and Illinois, but, you know, be competitive. And then those, even if you have a loss, it's a close loss, it doesn't hurt your net rankings, it doesn't hurt your BPI, your KenPom, all that kind of stuff. And
yeah, what killed them last year was they just got annihilated in rivalry games.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, if you look at how badly they lost in some of those games, like,
there was no digging out from it.
Sinks your season.
There was no digging out. I get, like, the sort of broader context here too. And again, this is why we talk about balancing objectives here, because if you think this is a bubble team, you want to maximize your chances in year one to get there. But at the same point in time, if you don't make the NCAA tournament, but you've won 19 games, you get an NIT bid, say you close this 23 cycle really strong in the fall, you've shown you can go into the portal and get a top 10 portal class. You know, if you make the NCAA tournament this year, that's almost like found money. But if you've signed a good 2023 class, you've done what we talked about earlier, which is get in the door with top flight 24 kids, you put together an NIT season now, and you go back into the portal and backfill, you know, roster with quality, you know, I think you're on course here. And really, I think what we're talking about is not, you know, we want to see them, the days of Norm lining up just murderer's row in the mid-90s aren't happening. That's just not the scheduling environment we're in anymore. That's just not going to happen, especially now in bigger conferences where you have more conference games swallowing up dates. You're just not going to see coaches line up, you know, six top 100 teams in non-con. But I do think the one thing we're sort of getting at and beating, you know, into a pulp here is, were there two or three dates where they maybe could have made some marginal increases in quality to where they could still maybe get some wins, but but also kind of maybe juice SOS a little bit. But at the end of the day, you know, this is what they've chosen to do. So we'll see how it pans out.
Well, so with all that being said, I mean, we do have a couple months to actually kind of get into each of these opponents after a sort of brief overview of what the you know, the game is going to be like. So Matt and I will kind of dive into some non-conference talk in forthcoming pods, as well as, you know, previewing the SEC conference and all that kind of fun stuff that we always do, as well as some recruiting talk always sprinkled in, like usual. Anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
No, I think we've covered it all. And I'm happy that we're now within 6 or 7 weeks of the season starting. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of sort of projection and a lot of movement here. I think I said before we came on, I'm just eager to see what the product looks like on the floor here, and I'll start talking about what Dennis Gates is actually trying to do schematically and how he's managing his personnel. So we're getting closer. We're getting closer to live, actual basketball, and that's always a good thing.
Well, with all that being said, I want to say thank you for tuning in. If you liked this podcast, you should probably make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast feed, which you can do at Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store. We're also on Spotify if you do the Spotify thing. And if you're subscribed, you also get episodes before the box score. Nate and BK have been going weekly, and they are switching to twice weekly now that we are in full-on football season mode. Again, game on Thursday, so tune in. Make sure that you get all those episodes. Those guys know what they're talking about. You'll also enjoy reading all the content, everything that we're publishing over at rocknation.com. And if you want to follow me and Matt on Twitter, you can follow him at MattJHarris85. I am at Sam T. Snelling. Tweets about dogs and drinks. We'll be back in a couple weeks, and we'll talk some more non-conference schedule. We'll take a look at what's coming down the pipe. So until then, thanks for tuning in, and see you in 2 weeks.